Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Wednesday, April the 25th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And Wendy, you're going to be very pleased to hear this. I am happy to report that it is raining here in Connecticut. And I'm saying that's happy because all of the grass and the gardens or everything are greening up. How am I doing so far?
Very good. I love your viewpoint. Good for you, Walt.
And it's been raining all day, so I've had lots of practice.
I think you'll laugh. So I opened the door to get something on my front porch right before the show, and I went, oh, it's starting to drizzle. And I went, my lawn guys are supposed to cut the lawn today. I wonder if that means they'll be able to do it. Which it wasn't a negative thought. It was just an I wonder, but it wasn't my normal, ooh, I love it when it drizzles. That's a great sign.
Little role switching going on here. Okay.
I know, but you know, that's kind of fun. Well, we definitely have a deep impact on one another, don't
that's
we?
That's right. Well, I can definitely tell you that there's no lawn mowing going on today, because if anybody, especially with one of these industrial lawnmowers, tried to go out there, they would just sink right into the mud. That's how much
right
rain there is.
You know, I saw that happen last year. The people across from me have a lawn service, and the guys use a riding mower. And there had been so much rain. And I guess they weren't paying attention.
Oh, dear.
And they literally got, I watched them. They got their tires stuck in like this rut like between the 2 yards where the elevation goes down slightly. And it kind of creates a trough where there was like, there used to be a little river flow before they showed up. And I mean, their wheels were just cranking. And I was watching mud just spew out the back end. They made such a disaster of this my neighbor's lawn. I felt so bad.
Oh,
but, you know,
goodness.
Luckily in Texas, grass grows really fast. So it was
sure,
fine,
yeah,
know, within a week or two. But,
but still.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I
mean, it's not a good thing when you have to bring in a tow truck to tow your lawnmower out of the lawn.
Yeah, that is funny.
You see, this is the Daily Dose of Happy. It is every day.
It is. We're laughing already, and we've only been on the air for
2 minutes. 2.5 minutes. Yeah, there you go.
You tickled my funny bone.
Who says the weather can't be fun? I tell you.
There we go.
So I'm trying to think what new and exciting things are going on. I mean, there's progress being made with the book. We've been sending sample cover mock-ups around, and I think we're getting pretty close to the one we're going to use, so that's good.
Cool.
I was going to spend time today trying to go through the last read-through, because I wanted to do one last editing read-through on the book now that it's all put together, just to make sure everything looks good before I send it out to you guys, and then after you guys see it, then I want to send it out to the rest of the co-authors. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, my wife comes home at lunch and says, let's go to Olive Garden. Well, there goes the afternoon.
Oh, that's way better. Yeah, have good food, have good conversation.
Yeah, so it was great. And we got weighed on by our favorite waitress. So, you know, it was all good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. And the book will be there tomorrow. It's not going anywhere.
Oh, good. Well, I want to share something kind of, I guess it's unusual and it's sort of just out there, but I think it's a fun LOA, gosh, I don't know what to call it. Just, it is an LOA scenario that I'm experiencing.
Okay.
So for anybody who knows the word game or the board, it's not a board game, it's called Sudoku, if I'm saying it right. It's basically 9 giant squares that are broken into 9 cells each, 9, you know, mini squares. And the numbers all have to add up to 9, or like, you can only use one number going up and down, 1 through 9, et cetera. Anyway, I've been playing this game for a long time. It's a really good mental brain teaser for me. It kind of makes me feel like it keeps my mind sharp. And then, I don't know, maybe about 6 months ago or so, I couldn't find another book form, like where I was doing it with a pencil and paper. It comes in the form like a coloring book, except it has these giant number puzzles on each side.
Okay.
And I pretty much finished the book I had, and I couldn't find another one except little teeny books. And when I do it late at night, and I don't want to be straining my eyes late at night with teeny books. So I found a game online. So I now play it on my tablet before I go to bed. And I've been playing, like, there's four versions, you know, like easy, medium, hard, and very hard. Well, I've been playing with the very hard lately. And if I can just describe one thing, I promise I'll get to the point of why I'm telling this.
Okay.
So if you imagine just one of the smaller squares broken up into nine squares,
mm-hmm.
It's like there's a way to figure out, there are some numbers that are like pre-populated, like maybe there's a one and a six in that box.
Okay.
But then part of my process is to go through and figure out what are all the different possibilities for those other squares that have nothing in them. And the game actually has a pencil feature where you can pencil in all the different possibilities. And then there's a pen feature so that when you decide, yep, I know a three goes in this square, you pen it in.
Okay.
Are you sort of getting the idea of this
yeah.
game,
mm-hmm.
at least a little bit? Okay.
Yeah.
So when you play the very hard, there comes a point that no matter how much figuring out you've done, you have to come down to sort of guessing, your best calculated guess as mm-hmm. to what certain things are.
Okay.
So let's say one square could either be a one, two, three, or four. Well, in the past, I'd hit one of the numbers, and then as I keep playing the game, you know, I go, oh, man, I screwed that up, and there's like 15 different squares I put the wrong numbers in. Well, in this particular digital game, there's a button you could push that says, show me any incorrect numbers.
Oh.
Which I really like.
Yeah,
so, like,
I don't blame
if I'm
you.
Not sure and I put in a number, I can quickly look at it and know immediately whether I got it right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've noticed lately, as I've been playing the very hard one, that when I get to the guessing stage and I go and I check, I've been right quite often.
Oh, that's a nice thing.
Yeah, and this has kind of been going on night after night. So mm-hmm. yesterday I got a little bit more inquisitive, I guess, with the universe. Like, how am I getting this right so much? You know, because in a way, at this point, it's sort of chance. And I'm like, but how am I doing that? Well, I started, when I asked the question, how am I getting it right so often? I started paying closer attention to what I was doing. So I'd come to one of the little squares and I go, well, the three could either be in this block or in this block. And then I'd pick one. And that's when I'd go, oh my God, I'm right again. But this time when I was playing last night, I realized that right before I selected the little square that I thought the three really belonged in, I noticed that it's like my eyes were somewhat fixated on it.
Mm.
So then, you know, I'm looking around the puzzle. I'm looking for another square that I can identify the right number. And I go, five, this one right here. So I'd pen it in as five, and then I double check, and it was accurate again.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept doing it. And I mean, you know, once you do it like three times in a row, it's almost freaky. You're like, oh, my God, now I'm on a streak. You know, am I going to ruin it? But I probably went four, five, six, seven times in a row where I was accurate.
Nice.
But I was really noticing how when my eyes were shifting around the whole playing board, all of a sudden my eye, like I would look at a square that might have three numbers penciled in, and my eyes would go to one of those numbers specifically. And then I would do it, and it was right. And I was getting the sense that my inner being is showing me the correct answer.
I know,
like,
exactly.
It's not
what
like,
you mean.
Oh, I'm just smart or I'm psychic. It's like I'm being guided
mm-hmm.
to yeah. the answer.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. I run into the same thing when I play poker. Like when I play poker online, I usually play the No Limit Texas Hold'em, and I don't mm-hmm. know if you know that game, but you get dealt two cards down, and then the rest are community cards, and not 100% of the time, but a very high percentage of the time, if I look at my two down cards on screen, I will see one of two things. Either one or both of them will look bright for some reason, or one or more of them will kind of do like you said. They would draw my eye. So like, even if it's like a king two, all of a sudden I'm looking at the two. And I'm thinking, why am I looking at a two? It's a terrible card in poker. And I'd be just drawn to it. And On some, on most occasions, I won't even play it, but on some occasions, I will play it, and probably like 80 to 90% of the time, the two will match like two twos on the board, so they'll have three of a kind or something like that.
Wow.
And some crazy thing will happen. That happens, if I see either that glow or my eye just keeps getting drawn back to a card, that will work out about 80 to 90% of the time. And the only thing, problem I've read,
cool.
The only thing I've run into is I just don't trust it all the time, so I don't always play it.
Well, after I did about 7 in a row accurate, I went, oh my God, like what am I doing? What's going on? And the next one was wrong. Because I got really conscious, which to me was throwing resistance in.
Yeah.
But what I was noticing is the slight, and I guess you're talking about it from a visual glowy thing. Mine is all of a sudden I just stare at it and I make a fast decision and I just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And what I am kind of surmising from this is that I'm being brought into another level of refinement in my ability to interpret and receive information and guidance.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm really loving it.
Mm, sure.
You know, right now it's just a game called Sudoku. And I have no investment in whether I'm right or wrong. Nobody knows. You personally, Walt, have no idea how many games I have played on this thing since I put this on my thing. And it doesn't matter to you or anybody else.
No. Nope.
And it doesn't even matter to me. So this is the case of, like, there is literally no resistance.
Right. Yes. That's
I'm
the good
just
part.
I'm playing a game.
Yep.
And what I know is if I totally screw it up, I just hit start over and
there
I do.
There it is. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But my thought last night was, as I continue to stay in touch and connection with my inner being on such an intimate level, how can I take this out into an arena where there is investment? Or that's probably not the right word, because I still want to hold on to a no resistance place.
Mm-hmm.
But someplace, I guess, where the stakes are higher, put it that way.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and not that I'm trying to, like, I'm not planning on going to Vegas because I'm not a gambler at all. But, you know, like, could someone like me go to Vegas where whatever money I spend is like a game to me? I'm not invested in whether I win or lose.
Right.
And play there where there are higher stakes.
Yeah. Well,
I find that fascinating.
You remember when I wrote the article or the story, actually, that's actually going to be in the book about when I won the poker tournament just by using Law of Attraction. And it was like, keep doubling. And I just kept winning and winning and winning. Well, during that tournament, I was using this technique pretty heavily and winning with it in ridiculous situations. Stuff that in my normal way of playing the game, I would never do, because it would be suicide 9 times out of 10. But I would follow, you know, the instinct, because I was trying to just practice this LOA thing all the way, and it would win. I'm thinking, this is crazy. This is absolutely bonkers.
So when you talk about a strategy, what exactly are you indicating?
Well, like, one of the kinds of pockets, the two cards that you get down is called a pocket. And one of the pockets that you might play on a low bet hand would be what they call suited connectors. In other words, like two hearts, one of nine, one of 10. So they're connected to each other. They're right next to each other in the order of things, and they're the same suit. But you wouldn't do that with somebody who's raised like half your pile of chips. You know, it would be a really risky thing to do. Well, I had a guy who gave me a raise of like 1/3 of my entire pile, and my instant reaction was the cards glowed. They both glowed, and my reaction without even thinking about it was to say all in, which from a poker point of view is suicide. You just don't do that, because you're going to lose it at least 60, maybe 70% of the time. And I won against two aces, which is the best possible pocket. The other guy had two aces. And I beat him. I mean, that's insane.
And so in a way, I'm thinking you cheated. And you know I don't really mean that.
Yeah.
But it's like, in a way, if you're getting guidance outside, well, not outside of yourself, because your guidance, I think,
it's inside. That's right, yes.
It's like you can't be caught because you didn't do anything illegal.
No, not at all.
But you kind of had the proverbial ace up your sleeve.
Against two aces.
by allowing your inner being to, like, be in partnership with you.
Right, yeah.
Which reminds me, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but Abraham tells a story that made me think of my experience with Sudoku, which is Esther one time was going to the DMV to get her driver's license renewed, and she had to go in person, you know, and do the eye test. And she really didn't know if she was going to pass this eye test. So they tell her, okay, go in and read this line. And she did. Read the next line. She did. And then it's like, read this line. It's like, oh, crap. And so in her own inner mind, she said, Abraham, can you see those letters and numbers? And Abraham said, yes. And she said, can you tell me what it reads? And Abraham told her the 6-letter number combination. And she passed her eye exam.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty darn amazing. But I mean, she has to be, and we know this about her anyway, because she, you know, is able to receive so much information, the level of sensitivity that she has to have in order to have a conversation so simplistic. Here she is at the DMV that makes most people nervous, and she's able to completely relax and receive Abraham and then speak out this 6-letter number combination. To me is like wild.
That is, you know, pretty crazy. I have
and
a question,
I remember,
though.
I probably heard that maybe three years ago, and uh-huh. I remember going, I want to do that.
Well, I have a question.
I want to be able to receive with that level of clarity.
See, here's what I want to know. If that's what she did with her driver's test, what does she do out on the highway? I mean, does she use her intuition to figure out whether or not there's going to be a traffic problem over there, so she goes the other direction? I mean, how does she do it? Like,
probably,
you know, somebody pulls
probably
in front of her or whatever?
I do. I use my intuition constantly when I drive.
Wow.
And there was a time that I felt I wanted eyeglasses for driving. It wasn't required by my driver's license, but I went and I got a prescription for, you know, driving, and I wore them for a couple years. And then I knew my eyes were changing again, and I went to the doctor, and he said, oh, yeah, these are too strong for you. You don't need glasses when you drive anymore. And I went, okay, cool.
Oh, nice.
And so when I had to go to the DMV, well, in October when my birthday happened, I knew I was going to have to do an eye exam. And the only guidance I was specifically given was, because I also have, I do have a prescription for readers.
Mm-hmm.
The guidance I was given is don't read while you're waiting.
Ah.
Because something I had noted for myself was that when I read for a long period of time, my eyes do get kind of fixed.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Based on what this prescription is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes sometimes 15, 20 minutes for my eyes to completely relax.
Yeah, sure.
So I can see far-sighted stuff. So I did not read. I was bored, but I sat for my 2.5 hours.
Oh, God.
And then it was my time to get up there. The gal says, read line 1, and I did. Read line 2, and I did. Read line 3, and I went, and here's my best guess. That's literally what I said to her. And I just read them the way I saw them. And I said, how did I do? And she said, you got one wrong, but you can get one wrong. And I went, yay. But I didn't think to say, Abraham, could you read these on my behalf? Because I did, you know, I don't know, at least back in October, I didn't feel like I had the level of rapport with my inner being that in the moment I could relax so much that I could, like, receive on that level. So I'm glad that my literal eyes were able to, like, pick up 5 out of the 6.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, it's a nice skill to have, but if you don't have it for that particular situation, you just go back to basics.
Yeah. But, you know, for anybody listening going, Walt and Wendy are like crazy.
We are crazy.
Yeah, we are.
But we know
we
that.
We are crazy.
You know.
And simultaneously, look at the fun stuff that when you, like, really study law of attraction and understand all that's available to us, you know, infinite intelligence is who we are. The part of us that's non-physical is infinite intelligence. We're connected to all that is. And so, to me, the really knowing how to tap into using law of attraction in a deliberate fashion is all about tapping into our internal resources, you know, and not always just for the purpose of attracting something to us.
Right.
But why not just know things?
Yeah.
Because that's fun.
It is fun. And it's good practice, too. It's really good practice. That's what I think. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you and I have talked about a number of times about the fact that I feel that you're further ahead than I am in terms of being able to talk to my inner being and have conversations and so forth. And yet, I can say that because I've been practicing stuff like, you know, something as innocuous as playing play money poker online and trying to win, you know, using intuition and trying to attract it by just wanting to double the pot and feeling good about that kind of stuff and so forth. That's good practice. And
you
get a lot of feedback from reality right away about, you know, how you're doing. Did that work out? Nope. Well, okay. Guess didn't have the right vibration there. Did that one work out? Yeah, it did. And how about that one? Yeah, that one too. And how about that one? Yeah, that one too. Oh, I think I'm getting closer to this. You get to practice putting out your feelers, so to speak.
It is cool.
It is.
It makes playing games. Well, it's like bringing in an unfair advantage, but I think it's fair if nobody else knows about it.
Hey, I've seen it in poker all the time. You get somebody who is it's pretty obvious they're not very good at playing poker, but it's also very obvious as a law of attraction student that they're really enjoying themselves. They're having a blast. And they're the ones who get on a winning streak and nothing they play goes wrong.
Hmm.
You know, they'll go all in with like a queen eight against king king and catch three eights, which shouldn't happen most of the time, but it'll happen with them every time, and their pile's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I actually watch for people who are adding a lot of chips fast, and I just don't engage them unless I'm feeling really, really good myself. Because I know, that actually is the first time I understood what the nature of a winning streak was. Why is it that there were some people who seemed to be lucky and other people who seemed to be unlucky? It wasn't until I studied law of attraction that I understood how and why.
Well, I know I've shared this, but my little sister is one of those people that I used to just think she was lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But that was in the days that I thought of things in terms of luck. I don't anymore.
Right.
Now everything has to do with vibration.
Yeah.
But for as long as I can remember, she's been buying scratch-offs, lottery tickets, plays horse races, you know, goes to the casinos. She never loses much, and she wins most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or she'll break even.
Right.
But, I mean, I remember she got a scratch-off, like, for $500. I mean, not everybody does that.
No, not many people get that.
And so, like, one time I went to a casino with her. It was my first time ever, and she was winning, and I brought $200 to play with, and I lost the whole thing in like the first hour. I was so depressed because we were supposed to be there for like a whole day.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, now what do I do?
Now what do I do, right?
And so she's like, oh, look at all these were the days of you pulled the thing and you played with real quarters.
Oh, right.
And she had buckets and buckets of quarters. And she owed me $50, and she goes, well, do you want me to pay you the $50 and you'll have more to play with? And I went, yeah. So she gives me, well, I blew that in no time at all, and now I'm stuck again. And she's still playing, and her friend was with us, and they both have buckets of quarters. And, you know, so that, I mean, this was years and years and years ago. And that to me was just one of those things where I said, I am not playing at a casino ever again because it's not fun for me. I thought it would be, but it's not.
Right.
And I've continued to watch her over the years win quite consistently.
Yeah.
And I guess it was last summer. We have horse races near where we live, and I know she loves to go. And I said, I'd like to go with you one time. I think it would just be fun. But let's pick a time when it's not in the heat of the summer, when it's still cool enough that I can enjoy it,
uh-huh.
being outside.
Okay.
So we went, and I kept telling her, I said, I will program the weather. And we were going in May when it really in Texas should be a little bit warmer. And I said, I was programming unseasonably cool, big breeze.
Very nice.
Laughed because that day she goes, man, it's pretty windy. I said, oh, it's perfect for me.
It's windy for Wendy.
Yes, it was. So anyway, I said, I'm not going to play the first round because I don't even know how to bet on horses. And so I said, I'll just watch you. And so I watched her and she won. And I was like, wow, that's cool. So we go to do the second race and I said, okay, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to do something. And I go, well, how do you pick? I mean, there's all these stats. She goes, oh, I don't look at any of that. I know nothing about their track records. And I'm like, really? She goes, oh yeah. I said, well, what do you do? She goes, I just look at their name. And if the name sounds cool to me, I bet on them. And which to me is kind of like if something kind of lights up for you or looks glowy.
Very similar. Very
similar. So I went, all right, well, if that works for her, well, I'm going to try it. So we'd look at things and like if something was like killer, I'm like, I don't like that name, you know. But if something was like Buttercup, I'd go, that's so clever. That's cute. Okay, I'm going to bet on Buttercup. So out of, I think there were maybe, I don't even know, 6 or 8 races, I think I won half of them following her strategy, and she won about 2/3 or 3/4 of them.
Wow.
She went home with having made money. I had a break-even day.
Uh-huh.
But to me, for me, that was like a winning day because versus my day at the casino when it was, I just lost everything.
Yeah, huge improvement.
You know, the fact that, yeah, huge improvement. But I remember asking her also, and maybe a couple weeks or months before we went to the horse races, I said, when you like bet on anything, I said, what are you thinking about? She goes, what do you mean, what am I thinking about? I said, I mean, what are your thoughts? And it took a lot to kind of get inside her head because she didn't know what I was really asking.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I went more broad in general. I said, well, what do you think about betting or what do you think about playing all this stuff? She goes, I don't think anything. It's just all fun. And I went, oh, well, that is what she's thinking. I said,
that is.
You're just thinking that this is a fun game and it's just fun to do? She goes, yeah. She goes, I don't take it seriously. And I went,
right.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I said, do you care if you lose? She goes, well, yeah, but no, not really. Because I'd rather win. It's more fun.
Yep.
But she goes, it's all just fun. So I started watching her when she would do a scratch-off. And I'd watch her scratch off a couple cards in a row where she lost. But I'd look at her countenance and nothing in her got upset or angry or mad. Nothing. And like with just as much childlike anticipation as Christmas coming, she'd go on to the next card.
Ah.
And nothing would win. She'd go on to the next card. You know, and almost every time she'd win something.
Mm-hmm.
But she might have a stack of 5 cards and she might win $1.
Right.
Or she might win $5 that pays her back the 5 that she spent. She went, oh, well, it's a break even. Yay. And she'd like celebrate and move on. I went, wow.
Yeah.
So even though she couldn't articulate what her thoughts were because she didn't know what that really meant.
Right.
I got enough information that I went, oh, I know what she's thinking. She's thinking this is going to be a fun experience and I just want to have fun.
Exactly.
And she didn't have resistance. And I went, ah, well, that's the major area.
There it
where
is.
I came into it with tons of resistance. Like, this is my $200. It was hard earned. I don't want to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to find the surefire wins. I had so much criteria.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Yet I didn't know how to bet. I'd never been to a casino. I knew nothing when I went into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was playing quarter slots and lost everything,
yep.
Which is all a game of chance. But it's not chance when you think about your vibration.
Exactly. Well, that's what David does.
You know?
I mean, David doesn't do the quarter slots. He does, you know, the modern slots. But he plays. All he does is play the machines and wins most of the time. Same kind of thing as your sister does. I mean,
wow.
He's just going in and having a good time and keeping his vibration really high. And he doesn't try to win money. Kind of like when I was winning the poker tournament, I wasn't trying to win hands. I was just trying to, you know, get my vibration up about having double my chip count. You know, and then just letting the game figure out how that was going to happen, let the universe figure out how that was going to happen. Well, similarly, he doesn't worry about what's going to happen on any given play, but he'll set a goal for himself. Like, I guess one of the kinds of machines he likes to play, you can get free spins, and it'll randomly give you a number of free spins. So he'll play a machine, and it'll give him 500 free spins. I mean, normally you get like 5, 10 or something like that. He'll get 500. And he'll run those 500 free spins, and I guess you can set it so that it just automatically keeps doing it. And periodically, it'll win stuff so that when he's all done, he's come up with a profit compared to what he had before. Now, was he figuring a particular profit? No. The only time that he told me a story about how he actually had a particular profit in mind, it wasn't so much a profit, but there's a, if you win, I guess, over $1,000, or is it 2,500, something like that, there's a threshold. I think it's 1,000. If you win over that amount, I think they call it a hand count, which means that someone from the casino actually comes to you and counts it into your hand.
Hmm.
And he said, I want to have a hand count. I've never had one. I want to have one today. Didn't even think about how much it would be. That just, he got excited about having a hand count. And sure enough, he had not one, but two hand counts that day.
Wow.
And the only thing he did wrong is he forgot to have his partner take a video of him receiving the hand count so he could keep playing that back to himself anytime he wanted to attract more money. That was the only mistake he made.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And wow. I'm sure it's because he just doesn't take it too seriously. He just goes there just to have fun.
Well, I noticed before I went to the horse races with my sister, I did, after I started to really understand that she does this for fun and that she does it without resistance, I started looking at my own beliefs about gambling or about luck or chance or that kind of thing. And what came to mind was, like, you know how there are so many sweepstakes that are in our environment. You can go to a barbecue place and you fill out a little sweepstake, you know, right, to win a free meal or whatever. And I was thinking about sweepstakes, and I thought, you know, I had at the time such a belief that I never win.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my belief. I never win. So, you know, the Publisher Clearinghouse.
Right.
Sweepstakes.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if it's still this way, but years ago you used to get these giant things in the mail and there were all these little stamps.
Right, I remember.
You had to, oh my God, I spent hours doing Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes.
Really?
And all the things they, oh my God, yes, I did. And I did all the things and I go back and I read the directions to make sure I did everything correctly. And then I'd send it in because those were the days you had to put it in the mail. And I never won.
Mm-hmm.
And every time it came to an envelope came to me, you know, and it said something like, you know, there are definitely three people in your neighborhood that are winners and you could be one of them. Oh my gosh. I, at that time, from a financial perspective, lived in such a state of lack that the idea that I could be a winner was like, oh yay, because it will finally help me dig out of my very deep debt. So I was coming from that perspective of,
right,
I'm desperate, anything to get me out of debt. And so I had this sense of hope, like I'd hope against hope that if I filled out this thing and sent it in, maybe I could be one of the three winners in my city. Well, it never happened. And then eventually I went, they say this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same verbiage. And so I think they're lying to me. I don't think there's three winners in my city. Or maybe there are. Who knows? Who cares? But I finally came to the conclusion, I never win. No matter how hard I try, I never win.
Exactly.
Well, that kind of became my mantra.
Mm.
It became my focus. And it was something I, you know, we ended the show yesterday with what you give a thought to repetitively is what you end up believing.
That's right.
And I believe this because I said it to myself over and over. My experience was giving me evidence that I never win, I never win, I never win. So when it came to any kind of freebies or sweepstakes, my thought was, there's no point in filling this out because I'm not going to win anyway. And I started to take on a very defeatist attitude.
It reminds me of something. There's a television show, a British television show called As Time Goes By that Louise and I have watched all. I think we've watched all the episodes of it about five times each. But this particular,
talk about Lionel.
Yeah, about Lionel. Exactly. Yeah. Jeffrey Pearson, who plays Lionel, is a bit of a curmudgeon in that show. And at one point he gets a Publisher's Clearinghouse envelope. And he picks it up and he looks at it and says, Mr. Hardcastle, you may already be a winner. Oh, yeah. And he throws it into the trash. The exact same attitude.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, but, you know, here's something that was interesting. I continue to receive those. And even now today, you know, I follow my internal knowing and I'll get, there's no reason to even open this. You can throw it away. And I'm
exactly.
Like, are you sure? Like I'm asking my inner being, are you sure? because I haven't, I've shifted my vibration. Is it possible there's a winning ticket in there for me? You know, and what if the winning ticket is the thing that I throw away? It's, oh, no, let it go. But because I knew that I had such a defeatist attitude and I was asking my sister all these questions, I realized, well, no wonder I lose. No wonder I don't ever win at these things. One, I no longer play. So if you don't play, you can't win.
True.
But the second thing is I had such a staunch belief
yes.
in losing, in never winning.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister didn't have any of that harsh energy.
Yeah.
Hers was very lighthearted, very fun. So what I did is I said to the universe, not that you have to, but it's what I did. I said, I really want to turn this around. I don't want a defeatist attitude in any area of my life. I want to believe anything is possible at all times. And I want to be a winner. Because I know I am a winner. Who I really am, I'm a winner.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, every time I came across a sweepstake, I would ask myself, well, what do you believe about this? And I started to notice that I went from being, I'll never win, to, well, it is possible. And I could tell I was shifting my energy.
Mm-hmm.
So that felt better.
Yep.
And then I started winning little things. And I'll be honest with you, Walt, I almost didn't realize I was winning.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you
because
mean.
Because I'd been losing for so long that even when I won, my brain didn't calculate it as, hello, hello, this defies everything you've ever done.
That's right.
But like there was something where I had won three specific things through this one company. And it was like one day after I won three, I went, Wendy, do you realize you have won three certificates for service, something that I could use with this one company? Like all the people that are here, and she draws a name out of the hat, and yours is the first name drawn every time. And I went, I've become a winner.
How about that?
And it, like, I had to shake myself going, Wendy, you're winning. Be excited. But you know, each time I won, I wasn't that excited because it was like so new to me. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
I almost felt embarrassed walking up to the stage and receiving this thing,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and other people are like, oh, congratulations. And I'm like, thank you, I think.
Yeah. Not quite reaching the vibration. Closer, but not quite there.
Yeah. So that was one where I thought about something so many times in a way that was did not serve me. I came to believe this thing that did not serve me. And then, through a deliberate attempt, I have been turning that around. And I'm a winner. I expect to win all the time.
That's good. That's really good. Now, here's the question, and this actually comes, in a sense, directly from the book that we haven't talked about yet today, but we are going to talk a little bit about. We're on the Law of Attraction, the basics of the teachings of Abraham, and the subsection is entitled, Can I Undo Past Programming by Others? What this really is all about is other people's beliefs. So the question that this all leads up to is, okay, you've believed all this time, up until very recently, that you were always a loser, and now you're starting to turn that around. To what degree did you acquire that belief through the influence of others?
So wait, you're asking this of me right now?
Well, I'm asking it of you, and then we're going to hear what Abraham says to Jerry's question, which is a similar question.
Hmm. What comes to mind is winning is like finding a needle in a haystack. Like, I think that was kind of the programming I had.
Okay.
That winning did not happen often, so don't expect it.
You think that was programmed into you from what other people said, or did you do all the programming yourself, or was it a combination?
I want to say it came from my family.
Okay.
That I heard adults in my family talking about using the example of a needle in a haystack a lot. Because that was a metaphor I used a lot
okay.
to talk about the unlikeliness of something happening.
Sure. Okay.
So that definitely could have been something that was programmed by others.
Well, let's look at the section of the book. Jerry asks, if one's mind has been programmed by others into some belief and this person finds that this belief is no longer desirable in their life, I would even suggest never was desirable, how can this person undo those beliefs? So that's pretty much the same question, really. And
yeah, what are you reading?
Do you want me to read it or do you want to read it?
No, you read, please.
Me read it? Okay. So Abraham answers, well, you are negatively influenced by two major hindrances. One is the influence of others. The other is the influence of your own old habits. You have developed patterns of thinking, so you can easily fall into those old habitual patterns rather than think the new thought that is in harmony with the new desire. It is a matter of deliberately utilizing a little strength, or as you say, willpower, and refocusing your attention in a new direction. The programming that you are referring to is only the result of your having focused upon something and then upon law of attraction's response to that focus. So anything that you focus upon will grow stronger. Some of what you may be calling programming is merely a healthy integration into your current society, but some of it actually hinders your personal expansion. In time and with practice, you will be able to tell the difference and guide your thoughts in the direction of your personal choices. And that is really what deliberate creation is all about. Well, the story you just told is how you are learning deliberate creation.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Wow, indeed.
Isn't it fun? I mean, I know this happens so very often, but isn't it fun when, because I don't ever read ahead, and some days, you know, we have the intention of starting or getting into the book, and then we never do. But isn't it funny how where this conversation landed is so much of what we just read.
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. And I have to admit, in this particular case, I mean, the last couple of days, we've talked about other topics away from the book. But each time when I have to, you know, set up the whole speaker program to start doing the broadcast, and before I've talked to you, I always type in, well, this is the next section of the book. So I've typed the subhead, can I undo this past programming by others three times so far? And this is the first time it actually got used. You know, so it did kind of stick in my head, and I did make that association. Mm-hmm. So as we're talking, I'm thinking, you know, that's just like what was in the book, I think. I picked the book up while you're talking, and sure enough, it was the same thing. So I tied it in that way. But that isn't always the way it goes. Like you say, often it just kind of comes out of the blue. So we're looking at a topic and like, wait a minute, we just talked about that.
That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, even though I live a life of law of attraction, I'm still always blown away when I see really fun evidence of the law of attraction.
Oh, yeah.
It's never boring to me. It always surprises and delights me and gets me excited.
Well, we're still learning how to use it consistently in all the ways that we want to live that completely abundant life. So, of course, it's all going to come up with, you know, different ways of experiencing it and looking at it and so forth as we're getting better and better at it. It's like a discovery process every step of the way.
I mean, I live so many years in what I would call not a state of flow and ease.
Yeah, right. Me too.
I lived a lot of years in struggle and pushing against and banging and pounding until I got things that I wanted it to be what I wanted it to be. And when I heard that it was possible to live in a life of ease and flow, I said, sign me up.
My exact words.
Really?
Honest to God, those are my exact words. Sign me up.
And something in me said, okay, Wendy, you know how to live a life of difficulty. You've done it. You've perfected it.
We're good at it.
A plus. Good job. And now let's let go of everything you possibly can of struggle and see if you can figure out how to do ease. And what's funny is sometimes it's been difficult to allow myself to let go of difficult. So that I can have ease, because ease felt too difficult.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I struggled with difficulty against the ease. But, you know, little by little, I've been making enough shifts that now most of my life is ease. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I want to say it's been about 10 years worth of a deliberate sense of I want to move out of difficulty and into ease. And it didn't come easily for me.
No, it hasn't come easily for me either. I mean, I literally discovered the secret in 9.5 years ago, November 2008. So for almost 10 years, I've been doing the exact same thing. I've been trying to get myself more and more into that ease place. And that's a hard thing to conceive of at first. Because my first reaction, probably your first reaction, was, I don't trust it. I mean, I literally didn't trust this idea of just going with ease. Things don't work that way, right?
I mean, every single thing I heard Abraham say sounded wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
But it also sounded like the opposite of how I had been living.
Right.
And even though I wanted what Abraham talked about, having the willingness to let go of what I knew, which was my space of familiarity, was not an easy thing. And I'm a person of evidence. Gotta show me. You know, I should have been born in Missouri.
Missouri, right.
But I wasn't. But it's like, show me and then I'll believe it. I need an example. And what I really found was that when Esther, or when Abraham would talk about Esther's personal experiences and Jerry's personal experiences and how they aligned with law of attraction or did not, those stories helped me want to strive for those kinds of things. Mm. I now had a model.
Yeah.
And even though I didn't know them personally, I felt like I did because I'd listened to their stories so often through Abraham. And I went, all right, if these two people are living this lifestyle and I have such a deep resonance with it, I truly believe that it is possible, even though I had no idea how I was going to accomplish it. But I went, that's what I want. I want that level of ease. And when I heard that they had a monster bus, that's what they call it,
mm-hmm.
one of those giant touring buses right. that cost like a couple million dollars,
yep. mm-hmm.
I went, I don't necessarily want a monster bus, but I thought, I would love to have the disposable income that I could buy one if I wanted it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love that level of ease. That just sounded really cool to me. So
that's why
now
I love...
I'm here.
Well, good. That's good. And that's why I loved our conversation yesterday so much. Or no, 2 days ago, when we talked about how belief develops. That a belief is a thought you think repeatedly. When I first heard that, this is what I was thinking about. I had these beliefs about life being hard, and I realized they were beliefs. It wasn't like, you know, a factual reality that can't be changed. That's what hit me so hard. That was actually just a belief I had built over time.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand it that way was knock your socks off time, because it certainly didn't feel like something I built up. I mean, I couldn't really say
right.
to myself, well, I can see how I was, you know, deliberately convincing myself that, you know, I am a loser who's always going to have to work hard. That was never part of the process. And yet, when I looked at what the result was, that was exactly the process. I was building a belief all those years. And it was me. I was doing it to myself. Oh, God.
And, you know, I would say the average person, and I mean, most people are living the average life by default.
Oh, yeah.
The average person thinks that what their beliefs are factually based.
That's right.
Because they have so much evidence of experience after experience after experience that supports their belief.
Exactly.
They say, but it's true.
That's right.
But it's true. And I know, I want to say in the 90s and in the 2000s, kind of in the self-help world,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of speaking about your truth. What is your truth?
Yes.
And it was fascinating because one person's truth was different than another person's truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started thinking, okay, so what is this thing about truth? Because those words were coming out of my mouth too. And then I came to kind of sift and sort and go, there are absolute truths. And then there are truths that are true to the individual. And I kind of started getting that awareness when I was following the work by Byron Katie. And her program is called The Work. So when I would say I was doing the work of Byron Katie,
was
I was following
thing.
Her program
yeah.
called The Work.
Right.
But she talks about what is absolute truth. And so like if you've got some area that's stuck in your life and you're having a hard time moving through it, she had some really powerful questions. I think her thing was called Four Questions in a Turnaround. And it was a series of questions, and I only can remember two of them right now, but it's like, if there was something that I really believed and I felt really fixated and stuck on this belief, one of the questions is, well, is that true? To which you might say, yes. And then the next question is that absolutely true? And, you know, even if no one defines the word absolutely, it has a very different feel. And all of a sudden you start to think, well, if it's absolute, that means that there can be absolutely no exceptions. And it causes you to shake that belief that was so stuck. And when someone says, is it absolutely true? Well, and it starts to shift.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started to recognize that, I went, oh, so what was so true for a person at the beginning of a session, because like what Katie does is she'll sit on a stage with somebody and then the audience gets to watch this very personal interchange of how Katie helps through a series of questions, helps a person shift their reality.
Mm-hmm.
And every time when they got to the, is it absolutely true? That person would begin to wiggle their belief. And I started to go, oh, so something that you're really fixed on in one moment can literally start to become not as true.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really that person's truth. Mm. And it was because that person has had experience after experience. So I went, oh, that's pretty fascinating. So yeah, a belief is really something that we personally, however we pick up the thought, it doesn't matter. But if we think on any thought over and over and over and over, the law of attraction is required to give you more things that are equal to that vibration of that thought. And so that's when you start getting one evidence circumstantially after another. And then it's easy to go, well, it must be true because look at how many experiences I've just had. And yet another person doesn't think that thought. They don't have any of those experiences happening to them. And why is that? Because they're not thinking that same thought.
Yeah, they're still on the old thought. They never left.
Well, they're on a completely different thought.
Yeah.
So if like one person keeps having, let's say, one car accident after another, after another, after another, and they're constantly thinking about getting in wrecks and, oh, their insurance is going to go up and they don't have money for another car and blah, blah, blah. And another person who's never had a car accident in their life, well, most likely that person is not thinking about car accidents. They're not thinking about that kind of thing. So law of attraction doesn't bring that to them.
Or they're not thinking of something in parallel, something in harmony with it, something
that would
be, you know, somewhat similar to it. Like there was a woman who was posting on Facebook earlier today about, I think it was about how she always kept attracting the wrong men, but she didn't know why. And a few of us were trying to help. You know, can you think about any common factors, you know, negative factors, or can you think of anything that's similar about each of them? And she couldn't think of anything, which probably means she just needs to sit down with somebody and really work through stuff. But it, for me, reinforced, not only are we very good at thinking the same thoughts over and over again and turning them into beliefs, but once we turn them into beliefs, we're really good at burying them so we don't know where to find them. You know what I mean?
Say some more about that.
Well, let's see. It probably works if I have an actual story to tell. How can I, what can I pick a story out of the air right now that matches this? Well, okay, poker. We'll go with poker. Because after I won that tournament, there were a few times where I would play and I would try to, you know, reproduce that feeling that I was in. And when I was in those games, in each of those times that I was trying to do it, I was also within a real time constraint because I only had like a half an hour to play and the tournaments usually play out for like 3 or 4 hours. So I was basically setting myself up to fail and I knew it at a certain level. Here's the thing. I didn't realize that I knew it at a certain level. I had built that belief over time. It was so buried that when I was trying to apply my new method, I couldn't access the belief. It wasn't within reach.
What was the belief?
The belief was that, well, it's a two-sided belief. On the one hand, I know there's not enough time to try to win the tournament, so I can't win. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, if I try to force the whole thing, then I'm definitely not going to win. And so what would I do? I would sit down to a tournament that was too that I didn't have enough time to play, so I was setting myself up against, you know, winning that way, and I would try to force the play. And that wouldn't work either. So I was double whammying myself, but I didn't realize it. I didn't realize it.
Two beliefs of resistance.
Two beliefs both buried. And it wasn't until after I did a few of those that I realized I've got those beliefs. I must. And I started digging around, and sure enough, they were there. But I didn't realize it. I had to go looking for it.
Well, and you know what? That's a great example, Walt, of what resistance looks like, acts like, sounds like for anybody who's going, what is this resistance they're talking about? Whenever you get a result that you do not like, it's because there's resistance within your belief system. There's resistant thoughts running around in your head that you probably are unaware of.
Right.
And so the way you shift out of having those same negative experiences happening over and over is you've got to get curious. I mean, you really have to be curious and start asking questions. And in Abraham terms, you poke around at that subject with enough questions, eventually something will pop in your head and will feel a sense of, oh, ooh, I think we're onto something here.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I think this is what it always works out for me. It probably does for you too. I successfully poke around and find those things when I first got myself into a happy place. If I'm poking around when I'm feeling depressed, I never find them.
And that's generally, you know, the truth. And the reason is because the problem is a different vibration than the solution.
Right.
So if you're in a place where you're frustrated and angry because you're not getting what you want, and you start poking around and asking questions, the questions might be valid.
Sure.
They may actually be the very catalyst that brings you the eventual answer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But you receiving those answers will probably not come then, because you need to wait until you've gotten into a place where you're more lighthearted and you're not frustrated and angry anymore, because now you're thinking about something totally different. You got distracted. And now all of a sudden answers just kind of pop in and you go, oh, that fits with that thing I asked before.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. And that's how that usually works. Now, I will tell you, much of the time for me, I purposely ask the questions when I just wake up in the morning, when I'm in a really good place. Because remember, resistance subsides and completely disappears while we sleep.
Right, right.
So when we wake up fresh in the morning, unless we immediately start thinking about the stuff from yesterday or the day before that we don't like.
Which I'm known to do, but
it's always easy to do.
Of course.
If we resist that temptation and just allow the morning buoyancy of feeling good and refreshed maintain itself, that's a good time to ask some questions. Now, the asking of those questions could take you back into feeling icky again. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
You're starting from a cleaner place, where if you start from the place where the problem exists, you're not going to get the answers. Not then in that moment.
Yeah, it can't happen. Yeah, it's absolutely true. Well, this has been good, not only because we actually got a little more reading done in the book, but we found a great way to tie it into this conversation, which I don't even remember how we got into it, but this was a good conversation, and it led to
you
some really
I
good stuff.
You and I weave and wind and go all over the place.
I know.
And eventually we land in a place that feels good, and that's what counts, isn't it?
It is what counts, yeah, and it does feel good. We have a good time with it. We've got about a minute left. I do want to give you the opportunity. How would somebody who wants to have a little more personal attention get a hold of you?
People can find me at wendydillard.com.
It's just that simple. See, you always have it so simple. I like that. Other people, they want, you know, phone numbers and emails. You just wendydillard.com. Bang. You're
all of that's there. All of that information is on my website. So just remember my name, wendydillard.com.
There you go. Very simple. Wendy, it's been great. I can't wait to do it again tomorrow.
I'll be here.
I'll be here too. We hope you join us as well next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.